miles away, another strange impact.
He said nobody goes down in there with us.
Technology reveals clues at one site.
It's not natural. That is definitely not natural.
While reports of men in black surround the other.
They work for an agency I had never heard of before.
Who or what is crashing outside of these communities?
Would you say this thing was under intelligent control then?
It had to be.
And what does our own government know about them?
I don't see how the military could possibly cover that up.
This is case number 65303, Alien Crashes.
Whatever it was, they wanted it back.
I looked up and I saw an object passing to the south that lit up the area.
May 14th, 2008, Needles, California. In the early morning darkness, at approximately 3 a.m., a local fisherman claims to see something he will never forget. A turquoise ball of fire suddenly lights up the Colorado River. Seconds later, it crashes into the desert. Some initially think it's just a meteor, but can't explain the strange color. And the incident isn't over yet. Within moments, five unmarked helicopters enter the area. But these aren't just any helicopters. They're double-rotor military models, and one has a large sky crane. Soon after, witnesses see the armada leaving, and it's carrying something. The object, according to witnesses, is around 30 feet long and bulky, like a tanker truck. But there's something else. It's still burning with a bright turquoise glow.
There seems to be a common witness testimony involving military presence, the military coming in and apparently removing or cleansing the area.
The military moves in hard, moves in fast, helicopters come in and yank out whatever crashed.
Needles is still under investigation. We don't know exactly where the crash site is, but we do know that a crash occurred, and we'll be trying to find out where that site is and see what happened.
The search in Needles starts with several breaking leads. Some claim that hidden somewhere in the dense desert brush is proof of whatever crashed here. Dr. Ted Ackworth will attempt to pinpoint where the object came down.
You've got vehicles crash landing into Earth. You should be able to find physical evidence, hard physical scientific evidence.
Pat Uskert will head down the river in search of the crash site.
As a UFO investigator, this is a chance for me to dig into the ground and maybe turn up some answers.
And Bill Burns will meet with eyewitnesses who saw the entire event unfold.
We're going to find out why the military comes in and denies anything ever happened.
The investigation begins at Needles KTOX Radio, where Bill and Pat meet station owner David Hayes.
And we find ourselves trying to figure out what happened on May 14th.
Yeah.
In studio with Bill Burns, Pat Uskert. If you have any information on the incident of May 14th on that morning.
According to Hayes, the morning following the alleged UFO crash, listeners begin calling in reports. And the calls are still coming in.
Let's try a phone call, guys. Caller, you're live on 1340.
Hey, it was coming down fast, but at an angle.
Did you notice a shape to the object?
Yeah, it almost looked like a huge meteorite from where I was. That's why I had expected to hear an explosion when
it
hit.
Yeah.
While some describe the object as a meteorite, hardly any believe that's the case after what happened next.
I think something came out of the sky, and it was retrieved, and I don't have any idea what it was. They were here to recover it so quickly.
And how quickly was that, by the way?
I was told within the first 20 minutes.
Wow.
Do you think they were tracking it if it's that quick?
I think you would have to be. I don't think you could get here that quickly unless you were staged, ready to go, knowing it was coming down.
But few claim to have seen the actual crash, or are afraid to admit it, because of the military's response.
I noticed some vehicles coming off the freeway. And one of them was incredibly strange. On the back with antennas and domes, the front license plate was U.S. government. And with blacked out windows, with a guy who was staring at me.
Hayes says he later saw the same vehicles outside the radio station, watching.
It was actually parked about 100 yards from the station. And I'm not quite sure, but the kind of equipment and the kind of vehicles they were in obviously were very high-tech, electronic, possible surveillance.
But surveillance vehicles are not the only mysterious presence. The afternoon following the crash, people see strange, unmarked planes arriving at a local airport. They're plain white with a red stripe down the side. And to some, they are very familiar.
The other intriguing part of this story is the Janet flights. We had had a report that there was these flights coming in and out of the International Airport that morning.
Janet is not the name of an official airline. It is a call sign assigned to these unmarked white jets with the red stripe, allegedly seen since the 1970s. This is one of these flights, seen at the far end of Las Vegas' McCarran International Airport. Janet flights are believed to carry defense workers to several notoriously isolated locations, including Area 51. But why are they being seen in Needles the day following the reported UFO crash? Bill heads to Laughlin Bullhead Airport and meets the manager, David Gaines, to see if he can find the answer.
Government planes do come in here from time to time.
That is correct, yes. Primarily, they're military aircraft.
Now, have you ever seen aircraft from an airline known as Janet Airlines?
No.
Have you ever seen aircraft coming in, covert aircraft, white, maybe with red bands on them, maybe blacked out windows for passengers?
No.
You never heard of this operation, you don't know anything about it.
I could give no credence to it ever happening because, to our knowledge, it didn't happen here.
If you'd seen that, and you had been ordered not to divulge that they use this airport, what would you tell me?
I would tell you that no aircraft have ever been here of that nature. We've never seen any.
The witnesses said that on May 14th, a Janet plane did land there under the cover of darkness. David Gaines said, never happened.
With witnesses at odds over what happened that day, the best way to find proof may lie in the vast desert. Pat is prepping an expedition down the Colorado River. His goal? To find the actual crash site.
We're bringing in archaeologist Garth Baldwin. He'll be able to differentiate between just regular ground erosion and the impact of this object.
But finding it won't be easy.
The vegetation in this area is pretty dense. There's some trails we're going to use to get to the clearings that are out there and maybe find some of the indications of a burn or an impact. If things are disrupted, it should be pretty apparent.
While searching the thick brush will prove formidable, a new development could aid the search. A witness who heard the radio program has come forward, and he has a general idea of where the object crashed. His name is Frank Costigan.
About a little after 3 in the morning, I came out to hunt for my cat. All of a sudden, the ground here lit up. Not like bright sun or bright moon, but, you know, enough to make me look up.
Frank has an incredible background with controlled flights. Though he now lives in Needles, he used to be chief of police at Los Angeles International Airport.
Could you tell me the shape of it?
It was round, flames coming off the front. It was blue and turquoise. But I'd say 5 to 6 times longer than it was wide. I thought I'd hear a sonic boom when it slowed down to the speed of sound.
Did you hear a crash?
Didn't hear a thing.
Costigan claims he doesn't hear anything because the descending UFO disappears over the horizon to the south. It crosses right over the Colorado River Bend, north of Topic. But from what he is able to see, Costigan believes this couldn't be anything ordinary.
You worked at LAX, correct?
Yes, I was chief of police, and I was also superintendent of airport operations.
Was this object anything like you'd ever seen before in your experiences?
Nothing commercial, nothing private, and nothing I'd seen in the military. It had to be something that was a controlled flight of some sort that maybe went haywire. That's my opinion.
Yet if this craft was at one time under control, who was guiding it and where did it come from? The desert outside of Needles is ringed by military bases and test facilities. To the northwest sits the China Lake Naval Range. To the west are both the Army's Fort Irwin and the Marine Base at 29 Palms. To the south is Yuma Proving Ground, where the Army test fires long-range experimental artillery. And, of course, most intriguing of all, to the north of Needles is Area 51.
In other words, we're standing right here in the middle of a military test area hotspot, where test aircraft, some things that are like beyond what we even dream of, are being flown.
Two theories are possible. One, that it was an alien vehicle. Two, that it was one of ours. The answer may lie with a witness who claims he heard the impact.
I looked up, and that's when it came in.
It kind of went through a cloud and came out, and there was another one directly behind us.
On a quiet morning in May of 2008, something crashes in the desert outside of Needles, California. Multiple witnesses watch as a turquoise-blue object is carried away by military helicopters. But there's more to the story, and it may be the key to understanding what's going on. All of this has happened before. In July 1947, another desert crash brings the small town of Roswell, New Mexico, to worldwide attention. The military's announcement that they have recovered a flying disc shocks the world. Allegedly, the nearby Army airfield sends personnel to clean up the crash site and instructs workers to leave no evidence behind. Days later, the military changes its story, attributing the crash to a weather balloon. Now in Needles, the team has located a key eyewitness who agrees to speak with the investigation on one condition, that his real name not be used. The witness, known only as Bob, arranges a meeting on the Colorado River, near where he saw the object on May 14th.
As I was sitting on the boat fishing at 3 o'clock in the morning, the whole front of the boat lit up. I looked up and I saw a bright turquoise, blue, something falling out of the sky. It came straight across from one side to the other, and it hit. It just kind of made a thump.
Where did it impact?
Just west of my position, maybe 200 yards from my boat, in between the railroad tracks and the river.
Bob claims that within 15 minutes, military helicopters appeared.
And almost immediately after the first helicopter showed up, there was a second and then a third. And that's when the big one came overhead. That thing came, circled over my boat, went to the site, dropped out of sight for a few moments, and the next thing I know, it was up and flying.
Bob not only sees the armada of helicopters arrive, but their return trip with the alleged UFO in tow.
Did you see the object being lifted on the skyhook?
Yes, sir. That's where I saw the shape. Not only was it well lit by the other helicopters, they were shining their lights on it. It was still very hot.
Both Bob and Frank Costigan's testimony say that the object may be in the area of the desert closest to the river. The investigation sets off. Archaeologist Garth Baldwin will be looking for several telltale signs.
There should be enough of an indication of an impact of the size that Bob talked about. There should be some displacement of soil marked by a change in the sand, change in the texture of the ground.
The sage grows very slowly, the grass grows very slowly, so if it's disturbed in any way, it's going to be obvious.
Right. We might get lucky, because if there was an object that crashed there, I don't see how the military could possibly cover that up.
But finding the actual site will prove difficult. Thick desert sagebrush blankets this entire area. The sagebrush will make an impact site hard to spot. But there's a backup plan in place. An eye in the sky. The ultralight will be rigged with a high-definition camera. As it searches from the air, Pat and Garth will follow on land, looking for any trace signs near the river, while Ted and Bill will retrace Bob's movements from the water.
If we think we can get relatively close to the spot, just let us know and we'll call in the ultralight. It can help us from the air see anything that might be on the ground that would be invisible to us.
We'll get you in the general area.
After nearly an hour, Bob sees something.
See where the brush comes all the way to the water?
Yeah.
That's where. We've got to be real close.
He recognizes some landmarks, power lines, and a bend in the river up ahead.
And I see the train trestle there, so you're sure that's this side of the...
One of the things that makes me pretty sure we're in the right spot.
The ultralight is called in for aerial support. After a few passes, the ultralight hits pay dirt.
Our pilot, Glenn, did say there was a burned area south of here. Now, that sort of corresponds with what you saw, right, Bob?
That's correct. Somewhere in this position right here. Due south of us.
The burns could be physical remnants of the flaming object's crash landing.
If we do S transects, you know, walking in an S, lazy S sort of pattern, and teams of two, 20 to 30 meters apart, we'll cover a lot of ground pretty quickly.
So why don't you guys start there? We'll start there and cross paths.
We better move. We don't have a lot of daylight left.
But before they get to the burn site, Ted and Bill find another possible sign of a crash.
Over there.
Check it out. That's about the size of what we're looking for.
Exactly. So this is really curious at how this dirt is all thrown up,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, this is about the size of a berm or a crater that you might expect. It's not so much in a crater form, except maybe this way.
So if something really landed and threw dirt up in front of it, it would be a dune or a berm just like this.
Yeah, actually, if you look at it, it's almost a bit of a horseshoe coming in from that direction.
It's fascinating.
And that's the direction that Bob described the object coming out of.
That's right.
Ted brings in Garth for his opinion.
I don't see any direct impact, you know, where it would have obliterated the living vegetation and then allowed everything else to live. I mean, I don't see an impact. I don't see an impact.
But the burn site is still further inland. A few hours later, It comes into view.
Oh, look at how burned this area is.
We've got burned stuff all over the place.
And Bob did say that when they extracted this object from the ground, this thing was still glowing.
But he described it as landing with a thud and not an explosion.
Exactly.
So that kind of argues against some kind of fire.
But Garth has other reasons for questioning this site.
There's little patches of burn stuff, probably from wildland fires. We've got a lot of burn trees here and over there. So, I mean, I think that's all natural. There's live vegetation all around it, dry vegetation all around it, old dry vegetation all around it. So that would have caught fire had this been the flaming impact that they'd said.
With no physical evidence found, the ground search hasn't been able to verify Bob's location. But with so much ground to cover, the Needle's crash site might still be hidden somewhere in the brush.
This really isn't as easy as we thought it was. Our pilot did spot burned areas from the air, and we went to those burned areas and we looked at them. No evidence of impact, but we're going to press on further and see what we can find.
During the ground investigation, a new lead has come to the forefront. George Knapp, an investigative reporter for KLAS Television in Las Vegas, has also been looking into the alleged UFO crash in Needles. And during his search, he came face to face with government operatives that may actually be men in black. Agents who are allegedly charged with intimidating UFO witnesses and keeping these types of events out of the public eye.
George Knapp was an eyewitness to these people and an eyewitness to who they are, where they were going, and what they're doing.
As Bill heads to get this new information, Ted and Pat shift their focus to Pennsylvania, where a crash in the small community of Kecksburg is yielding fresh evidence.
The Kecksburg incident is a cornerstone of ufology. It is Pennsylvania's Roswell. We know that something crashed from the sky. It was on TV, it was on the radio.
We have a range of instruments. If we can find a position that we feel with high confidence could be the crash site, we can use these instruments to see what we can learn about what's underneath the soil.
As Ted preps a full-scale scrutiny of the Kecksburg site, testimony from the last surviving witnesses could show that the military has been complicit in a cover-up for years.
I stood there and I walked around looking at it. This thing ain't from here.
In Needles, California, a glowing object crashes into the desert, seemingly out of control. Witnesses say it is retrieved by a group of military helicopters. But the incident doesn't end there. People see unmarked planes landing at the local airport. Planes identical to those reportedly used for transport to the top secret military base at Area 51. But this has all happened before, and not just at Roswell. Over 40 years ago, something crashed in the sleepy town of Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. But whatever it wasn't out of control. According to witnesses, it had to be piloted by someone. On December 9th, 1965, around 4:45 p.m., something is moving in the sky. It's a glowing fireball. But many think that this can't be a meteor, because it's moving too slowly. Whatever it is, the object loses control and crashes. What immediately transpires bears eerie similarities to what has just happened in Needles. Is it just a coincidence? Or are these two crashes mirror images of each other 43 years apart? Bill Burns is meeting with Stan Gordon, the leading investigator of the Kecksburg incident. He's researched this case for over two decades.
witnesses out tell us the object turned and came back in towards Kecksburg. This object, it came down as though it was making almost like a controlled landing. And moments after it fell, people reported like a column of bluish-gray smoke rising up out of the woods that dissipated very quickly.
According to research, hundreds, if not thousands, of people in Michigan, Ohio, and Ontario, Canada, reportedly witnessed the UFO as it traveled on a trajectory that finally led to its crash landing in Kecksburg.
The police departments, the radio and TV station were being bombarded with calls, and as it proceeded into Westmoreland County, the media out in this area began to be overwhelmed with reports coming in.
Witnesses agree with Stan Gordon's findings. This tiny town was consumed by the incident. No one had ever seen anything like what happened that night. Pat meets with one witness, Bill Buellbusch, who saw the object fly over and crash in Westmoreland County.
Billy, tell me what happened.
Heard this sizzling noise, and then I seen this red fireball coming. Come over just like this, and I watched it. And it went up towards the mountain. It made the turn and come back, a perfect turn, and come down. It just seemed like it was trying to find a place to land.
Would you say this thing was under intelligent control then?
It had to be.
Buellbusch says that he got in his Corvair and drove to what he believed was a downed aircraft.
So I grabbed my flashlight and went down through the woods. And I could see it down there. I figured, well, how can they come out? There ain't no windows and there ain't no rivers, no nothing on it, you know.
So you got a close look at this thing.
Oh, I was only about 8 feet away from it.
Was it smoking? Was there
anything? It smelled like sulfur. Smelled like rotten eggs.
Bill Buellbusch really helps us eliminate some of the more prosaic explanations of what this could have been. A meteor or maybe a crashed airplane or capsule. He saw this fireball coming down in the sky and turning. He specifically said that this had to be under intelligent control.
Soon after, emergency personnel reached the crash site. And volunteer fireman Jim Romansky is one of them. He is also surprised by what he sees.
I was shocked because I was preparing for a smashed up airplane. And here was this humongous piece of metal buried into this drainage ditch.
Can you describe exactly how it was buried?
We're talking nighttime, first of all. We're talking piles of brush around this thing because it come flying down through the trees.
Romansky says the UFO was acorn-shaped and had a ring of strange markings that encircled the entire object. This description is rare, unlike other reported UFO shapes, such as triangles and discs. And there's more. Strange hieroglyphics are reminiscent of another case. The Bentwaters UFO that was reported to have landed near a British military base in 1980 displayed similar markings to those the Kecksburg witnesses describe.
Have you ever seen anything like this ever in your life?
No, absolutely not. My impression after I looked at this thing, I stood there and I thought about it and I walked around looking at it. This thing ain't from here.
And then, a development that would repeat itself 43 years later in Needles. Within hours of the crash, dozens of military personnel, including Army and Air Force, arrive on the scene. They reportedly cordon off the area, preventing the public from reaching the crash site. Inside this restricted zone, they are searching. Bob Gaddy, a reporter with the Greensburg Tribune, was dispatched to the crash scene, and he distinctly remembers the intimidating military presence.
When I got there, there were probably at least a dozen military personnel, in addition to Pennsylvania State Police officers. I said, I need to go down there. They said, there's nothing there. And I said, well, if there's nothing there, why can't I go in there?
Gaddy tells Pat that the military, not the state police, were clearly in charge of the scene.
I've never experienced a time in a civilian situation where the military had come in and taken control of an accident site. Why would the Army be there?
We were stopped by a military. You heard the bolt snap on the rifle, and I stopped in my tracks, and Ron stopped, and, you know, we talked to him for a second. He told us to get out, get back to where we came from.
He looked at me and pointed his finger at me. He said, nobody goes down in there with us.
Witnesses tell Stan Gordon that later in the evening, they see a large flatbed truck drive into the crash area. Within the hour, the truck drives from the site in a hurry, carrying something under a tarp.
If you would have walked in front of it, they would never stop for you.
Gordon says that during his own investigation, Jim Romanski, Bill Buelbusch, and others led him to a spot they said was the crash site. These interviews were conducted independently, and each witness led him to the exact same spot.
I'm very hopeful tomorrow we can find the exact location that was taken to 20-some years ago. Okay.
It sounds like there was some sort of crash. I can bring in ground-penetrating radar and see if we can find anything that hasn't been found before. Not only does Stan have multiple corroborating witnesses who pinpoint the location, but also it sounds like there's a very good chance we'll be able to find some sort of debris.
Eyewitnesses and investigators have seen this site before, but never with technology like this.
You think a signature like this might be consistent with a signature made by a crashed vehicle? Is that possible?
Yeah, that's possible.
And across the country, the Needles case breaks wide open with reports of officials that could be the infamous Men in Black.
They are legitimately federal agents.
It was something other than this world.
In December 1965, a flaming object is reported falling through the sky in Canada, Michigan, and Ohio. In these locations, some claim that debris falls to Earth, that sonic booms are heard, and that a seismograph records the impact. But none of this evidence ever surfaces. It is only in the small Pennsylvania town of Kecksburg where anything real is verified. Several witnesses report that in this ravine, an acorn-shaped object with strange markings crashed. And it is this location that has become the investigation's focal point. The team will hike in with researcher Stan Gordon, geologist Steve Kite, and Pete Hutchinson, an electromagnetic surveyist. Gordon compares the terrain with a photograph he took here in 1985 and believes this is the spot where the UFO impacted.
Well, you have the photo. Does this area here look like it might match?
Oh, Ted, this is the best match we've seen all day. I think the photograph that we have here was taken 5-10 feet behind us looking in that direction.
We have these what look like one or two fence posts. Looks like some barbed wire and a fence post here. And it looks like another one right up there.
The fence posts and Stan Gordon's matching photograph, taken alongside eyewitnesses, all point to this spot as the site of the Kecksburg crash. But for years, debunkers claimed that what caused the damage in this ravine was a Russian space probe. The shape and size of the Cosmos 96 probe, originally slated to reach Venus, was similar to what eyewitnesses described. But recently, even this explanation was thrown out. According to NASA's National Space Science Data Center, quote, U.S. Air Force tracking data on Cosmos 96 also indicate the spacecraft orbit decayed earlier than the 4:43 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the 9th of December. But NASA's interest in the crash extends further back. At this very site in 1965, witnesses saw NASA officials alongside the military.
I see NASA there with their uniform on, their patch on the side. They had that white lunar on.
this all ties back to Roswell. A secretive approach to a crash. Something taken from the site. On board a flatbed truck, covered by a tarp. And under cover of night. But after all these years, could they have missed something?
Pete Hutchinson here has an array of scientific instrumentation for scanning the earth around the site.
We're going to look at the architecture of the site to see if anything is still here that is evidence of a possible crash 43 years ago.
Pete Hutchinson and his assistant Brian begin the electromagnetic scanning of the ground. The tool emits electromagnetic energy into the soil, and moisture carries the current, which is sensitive to metal.
So we'll be able to find any metals and then also any anomalous soil conductivities?
Correct.
Okay, well, why don't we put the tool to work?
During the search, the scanner picks up some metal conductivity. But the size and identity of the metal is unknown without further information processing. Significant anomalies appear on the two-dimensional map.
That red indicates a heightened level. Just how strong is that?
That's fairly decent for this area. There's definitely metal there.
So you're saying that metal is naturally occurring metal?
It comes from something other than what's naturally occurring in this area.
You think a signature like this might be consistent with a crashed vehicle? Is that possible?
Yeah, that's possible.
According to Hutchinson, what makes this unusual is the high concentration. This amount of metal is not typical in this area of Pennsylvania. Hutchinson suggests that he needs area to determine the source.
This science only tells us where to look, and the next step is to go in there and investigate. Physically dig it and do an intrusive test.
An archaeological dig.
An archaeological dig, yes, exactly.
The team needs to expose the area before dark, so Pat joins to assist on the dig. When the soil is uncovered, Pete uses the ground-penetrating radar to look for a specific metal source.
Hey, check this out.
It starts here. Starts right there. And it ends right there.
It's not natural.
That is definitely not natural.
With the sunlight fading, the dig will have to wait until morning. What is the source of the metal buried at this alleged crash site?
Now, I don't know what's down there, but I can't wait to start digging and turn up some answers.
In the investigation into the alleged Kecksburg UFO crash, ground-penetrating radar has revealed an anomalous source of metal. At the exact spot where eyewitnesses claimed the UFO crashed in 1965. The team has exposed the site and are ready to continue digging to discover the source of the metal. But within minutes, the investigation suddenly hits an impenetrable wall.
GPR told us that you've got metallic conductivity, and I'm hitting bedrock. Now, either the object skimmed along the surface, or the metal would have to be under the bedrock, which is totally unlikely.
Maybe this thing did come across this area and left some kind of a residue on the stone.
But upon closer examination, the bedrock itself is the reason for the anomalous hits. According to Pete, this bedrock contains iron.
The rocks themselves could be so heavily ferrous that they're giving a false positive to the GPR.
So whatever hits we got may have nothing to do with the crash.
Despite the bedrock's false hits, the overwhelming witness testimony and the corroborating interviews makes the site compelling.
This is where everyone agrees the object came down. And there was, according to all eyewitnesses, a military presence hauling this craft away. We didn't find anything today, but an object crashed right here in Kecksburg.
Bill now turns back to the Needles crash. George Knapp, an investigative reporter for KLAS Television in Las Vegas, has a surprising lead on the helicopters allegedly seen after the crash.
We were working on a story about black helicopters before we started working on this Needles story. We figured out who they were. They work for this very interesting outfit out of Fort Campbell, Kentucky, the Night Stalkers.
Task Force 160.
The Night Stalkers, or Task Force 160, is a special ops aviation regiment, and it requires a secret clearance for all of its members.
When George Knapp was investigating what group of black helicopters might have been operating in Needles, California, he discovered they were the Night Stalkers, the very same group that was transporting a flaming object in the Cash Landrum incident in Texas in 1980.
The Cash Landrum incident, like Needles, involved military helicopters pursuing and removing a strange glowing object, which led to three witnesses developing strange blisters and radiation sickness. But Knapp's investigation digs further and discovers military personnel that were working in Needles on unnamed top secret projects. Could these be the elusive men in black, reported by many UFO witnesses?
These guys were driving back to Las Vegas from Needles. Pretty soon they come up and they drive up right next to us, the engine running, and they get out and start talking to us. They said they're federal agents. They flashed a badge, and sure enough, they are legitimately federal agents. They work for an agency I had never heard of before. They transport nuclear weapons.
But the specifics of why these agents are in Needles are still unknown.
They're highly trained. They're a dangerous group of people. These guys are commandos. They carry all kinds of weapons. They're very tough customers. I'm not sure that they're going to be happy that they've got this much attention.
Despite their presence, Knapp doesn't believe that these agents are men in black or that they are involved with the nearby crash. Yet in both the Needles and Kecksburg crashes, eyewitnesses reported seeing large objects being hauled away by military vehicles. If this agency is not involved, who is?
What we're finding out is that the stories of people who say there was a strange federal government agency and black SUVs traveling in Needles right around the day after that event, those stories are true.
Whatever crashed, Area 51 planes were seen in the vicinity. The helicopters that retrieved the object may have been involved in another case where people were exposed to radiation. And now, federal agents in the Needles area, by their own admission, have some association with nuclear weapons. Could this crash involve some craft that uses nuclear technology, emits radiation, and be so top secret that its home base is Area 51?